Turkey's Psychological Warfare Destroys Lives, a column by Frederike Geerdink. Ever since the meeting in Sochi where Erdogan met with Putin, drone strikes in northeast Syria have increased significantly. It's even hard to keep up with which target was hit, when and where exactly, and how many people were killed or injured. It reminded me of the outrageous amount of court cases against Kurds in Turkey, which are likewise impossible to keep track of. This psychological component of the war against Kurds is intended by Ankara. Psychological warfare are tactics used in war to reduce the opponent's moral or mental well-being by instilling fear, anxiety, and terror. It's used in every war by all sides, and it's also rather common to target civilians with it. In general, civilians are targeted with propaganda, either positive or negative about the parties at war, or, in other words, to paint a better picture of one side of the war and a negative one of the other. Turkey, though, has been taking it to new levels since decades, targeting civilians not just with propaganda, but with assorted tactics to destroy their lives. It was years ago, I think in 2012, that I finally wanted to get a good grasp of court cases going on against Kurds in Turkey. I wanted to know how many HDP members were in jail, how many were prosecuted, how many were convicted, and how many court cases were going on in total. I headed to Ankara and met with one of the lawyers who worked for HDP. He told me that nobody knew how many HDP members were being prosecuted. Nobody knew how many court cases were going on. Nobody knew how many members were in detention, or already arrested, or released. He tried to paint a picture of the situation to make me understand just how mind-blowingly huge the judicial war against the Kurds was. There were, and are, house raids and detentions literally almost every day. It wasn't even possible to keep track of HDP members in trouble, let alone of politically active Kurds in general. There are journalists, lawyers, activists for a wide range of NGOs involved in cultural, social and political work and in human rights. All people who may not be party members, but active for their communities and very likely to be detained, prosecuted and jailed as well. That's ten thousands of people in trouble, and a majority of them have not one, but several court cases against them, all in different stages in different courts. Like in Aysel Tuluk's case now, the veteran Kurdish politician who is in jail but should be freed because she was diagnosed with dementia. A court ordered her release earlier this month, but she remained in jail because she was already convicted in another case. And the release order didn't affect the case for which she was jailed. Former HDP co-leader Selahattin Demirtas is another example. I'm sure his lawyers know how many court cases there are against him, but it would cost him too much time to explain it all to you. Time they desperately need to juggle all the cases, not lose track, and try to get him out of jail. If that's not a clear case of not just judicial warfare, but psychological warfare as well, I don't know what is. Imagine what it does. Not only to the people involved, but their families and friends as well, and to the Kurdish community as a whole. The intense bombing campaign in northeast Syria, and in the Kurdistan region in Iraq for that matter, has the same kind of effect. What if you want to keep proper track? You'd want to know when Turkey bombed where, and what and whom the target was. People die in attacks, and it's not always immediately clear, or ever, if it's a fighter or a civilian, which is especially relevant in a war. Injured people can recover, but some of them succumb to their wounds later. Some are underaged, others are adults. What doesn't help either is that some people are known by different names. Targeting fighters is legitimate in a war. There are rules to be followed, though. Theoretically, Turkey is allowed to kill fighters with drones in northeast Syria because it has permission from the country where the killing takes place. Indirectly, that is, by getting Putin's green light, who is speaking for Assad. But that theory disintegrates in practice, because Turkey is not just targeting fighters, but explicitly bombing civilian areas as well, with civilian casualties as a result. For the theoretical rules of war to be applicable in practice, it is required that the parties have at least the intention to respect the rules and strive to, for example, protect civilians as good as possible. Now look at the three men involved here, theoretically responsible for keeping up the rules of warfare: Putin, Assad and Erdogan. Do I need to say more? The casualties among civilians, of course, instill a lot of fear and anxiety among the population. Just as the judicial warfare in Turkey intimidates millions of people, always having to be ready for the anti-terrorism squads to barge into their homes, prosecutors to open yet another case against them, and judges ordering their release and renewed or continued detention. Both the judicial warfare in Turkey and indiscriminate drone attacks in northeast Syria once again make very clear who Turkey sees as its opponent. Not just armed fighters, but explicitly civilians as well. Columnist Frederike Geerdink is an independent journalist. Follow her on Twitter, fgeerdink, or subscribe to her Kurdistan newsletter. The link is in her Twitter bio.